everybody, Matt Michaels here on the Developer Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. So, Joe, did you make it through the Slaughter Bowl, or was it did you like go to Netflix at some point?
No, I'm a football fan. I'm going to watch the whole game regardless of everything. Plus, I needed the over, so that was a struggle to get there.
Yeah, right.
And then I was with my buddy on the phone. We were texting because we both ended up needing the over. And I didn't really want to bet against Kansas City, but I bet Philadelphia. But it was probably the least amount I've ever bet on a Super Bowl.
Sure.
I bet a total of $100, $50 on two bets just to, you know, didn't have any prop bets or nothing. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take them on the money line. So I won $55 to bet 50 to win 55 that Philly would win the game. And then I bet the over. So then he was like, messaged me. The score was 40-14 with like 2 minutes and 40 seconds to go. And he's like, yeah, I'm at this party. This guy, if the score stays the same, he wins $100,000. I'm like, wow, you know, Philadelphia's got the ball. They're running the clock out. And then all of a sudden it was fourth down, and they decided to go for it instead of punting. So it gave Kansas City the ball at the 50. I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. You're up four touchdowns. You just punt the ball, the game's over, you know. And then the next play, they scored the touchdown, and I'm like, I said something to him, and he's like, what happened? I'm taking a leak. And I'm like, Kansas City just scored a touchdown on the next play. For some weird reason, Philly went for it. He goes, yeah, the guy just left the party. I was like, yeah, I can imagine why. He has to go outside and throw up.
Jesus. Yeah, it's I got in at sometime. They gave the Chiefs 26.5, and I'm like, at this point they got to score enough to cover 26. So, you know, in the end, it's just like that line just kept going and going. I'm like, you know, they're not going to get shut out. They're not going to score 6 points. So, you know, get in on it right now when you're getting the 26 points. Shit, it's, you know, good old Vegas. You never can tell what's going to happen, right?
You never can. I'll tell you what, though, man. I started the day off, you know, ready to razz the it's all fixed. Everything's for the Chiefs, okay? So I start off, the refs are at it already. The Chiefs won the coin toss. It's got to be rigged. And then it led to, you know, that first penalty.
Right.
So then after that, it was like 6 penalties in a row for the Eagles. And it was like, man, right, these refs, they need to be fair. It's unbelievable the calls that they're going against Kansas City. And everybody is like, Jesus, are you guys serious? Like, it's fucking sarcasm. And, you know, you know, Tom Crawford, and it's like, all those start that holding penalty looked legitimate. And then I posted something else, and I literally had to explain it to him. It's like, bro, like, what is wrong with you? I go, yeah, here it is. That he had a, I go, down 27. They were down, it was down 27 points, and it was 2nd and 14 on their own 25, and they ran the ball. So I wrote, guess the NFL said it's time to pass the torch. It was a good run. And then, of course, Thomas, NFL said? Question mark, question mark, question mark. And it's like, dude, because, you know, everyone says the refs and the NFL fix the games for the Chiefs. Like, it needs an explanation. Then another guy was like, oh, this one aged well. And it's like, bro, like, really? So then I got, then he wrote, oh, just a butthurt Chiefs fan. So I'm assuming he's talking about me. Like, I'm like, and I wrote clueless. And then he got all upset, and he was like, and then I was like, oh, he was the butthurt Chiefs fan, so he was just venting because he was upset. Because, you know, they only won two of the last three Super Bowls.
Right, of course.
What a crap team they are. It was like, man, can't even bust balls on Facebook. Like, wow.
Yeah.
So I was, turn next year, I'm going to have to turn it up really, really a lot.
Right.
It's like, man.
Welcome to the world of what I have to sit through and read on pro wrestling and watch some of these marks, you know, who it's, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you say facts and they want to confront you. You question their facts and they want to confront you. You throw in sarcasm and people don't get it. It's just that community now that has been created.
Yeah. Social media has kind of killed sarcasm.
It has. Absolutely. It's ridiculous. I was sitting next to an Eagles fan. And I have no problem. I had no stake in the game, except that I needed to cover the bet. And the Eagles kicked a field goal. And I'm just like, dude, like, you're already up like all these points. I'm like, here's the thing. I need you to stop scoring. I need to cover that. And it's like, it finally hit him as like, oh, okay.
Now explain to me. Now, you took a bet that you were getting 26 points?
Yeah. So
Case, you bet like $1,000 to win five?
No. So in game, the line was moving.
Yeah. Okay, I got you.
Right. So as the line was moving and all of a sudden, you know, they're down. I think it was when they were down 31. Because that's when the Eagles kicked the field goal. So they were down 31. And so basically the next score that got them to 14 covered that 26. And then that second touchdown is the one that, you know, sealed it. So, yeah, all of a sudden they were just giving the odds. And it was just like the in-game line changes were just, it was just fascinating because as they sat at zero, they kept giving points to KC. And I'm like,
yeah, I was tempted because it was 24 to nothing. Right. And at that point it was like plus 982. So you could have bet $100 to win 982. And it's like, well, if it's as fixed, so that's why, and I also gave that out to everybody since you know it's fixed for the Chiefs, you know, you guys should be all over this bet. You know, bet $1,000. You're gonna win 9,800 because it's a lock because the reps are in on it.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's one of the reasons to stay away from the money line is because I started seeing what the odds were in the, you know, in the points, and I'm like, oh shit. Well, you know, there's no way you're going to lose by that much some point.
Yeah, you never think there are, especially with the Chiefs and stuff. But I'll tell you, man, it went. They already wrote off the Eagles on the first penalty,
right?
And it was like the guy went like this, and it's like if you're shoving in the shoulders in the area, you know what? They're going to probably let it slide, especially offensive pass interference. But when you go like this up to the guy's head and it's obviously on a camera shot, like if that happened and it was the other way, people would have been nuts about how they didn't call it and it's rigged for the Chiefs, which is hysterical because, you know, it would have been the other way around. And then the next one was the ball was long gone and he hit him in the head. You know, you don't have to agree with it. It's like a lot of these, you know, with the quarterback when it's roughing the passer. I've seen a million calls that I'm like, oh, that's a bullshit call. I don't like it. But based on their rules of protecting the quarterback, you know, man, how many iffies? And again, it's like when Mahomes does it, and, you know, Lamar does it. It's like they ain't stupid. or they fake slide, or he's about to go out of bounds and he sees nobody touching him, and then all of a sudden he goes for another 9 yards. And it's like, yeah, if you would have hit him, he's basically right on the edge, and then he would have cried for a roughing penalty. And, right, you know, the quarterbacks in the last, man, 10, 20 years, each year, it's just to get away with so much more. And back in the day, if they got away with it, it wouldn't be that – it would be very rare, because most quarterbacks were pocket quarterbacks and didn't really run. Now, yeah, now it's such a rarity to have a quarterback that isn't mobile. You know, back in the day, oh, my God, Michael Vick, oh, my God, this guy can actually run a little bit. And they still wouldn't make him do it. But you go, look, almost every quarterback can run.
Yeah.
You know, Kirk Cousins is a dinosaur. Because, yeah, you got bad offensive lines. They put in the young kid Penix, who everybody figured needed a couple years. He came in and did well because he's mobile. Hey, nobody's open. Fucking, I'm running. And, yeah, and now everybody does it. And now they all run. And now it's like they wait for that last second. The defensive lineman's about to hit you. You slide, and he's still going another 15 yards because that's a penalty. So, yeah, you know, I hate it. But these guys got carte blanche because bottom line is the quarterbacks run that league. So,
oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
That's why Saquon Barkley barely got any votes for the MVP.
Right. Right. And I mean, what a, you know, you just, they focused on him, you know, in terms of, you know, shutting down the run game. So it's just like,
you know, just because of him, Hurts barely threw the ball. And we know, yeah, because years ago, he, when they got to the Super Bowl a few years ago, he was throwing 30, 40 times a game. Now, yep, they showed the stat, it was like 24 times a game, one of the lowest.
Yeah.
Because he also runs. So between his running, they're the most, yeah, balanced team. You know, back in the day, if you couldn't run the ball, you ain't winning shit. It didn't, yeah, matter. Defense and running the ball, you could throw it all over the field. If you couldn't run the ball or play any defense, you had no shot. So it's crazy how the evolution of football from when, you know, I used to watch, yeah, games back in the day. It's like, you look at Terry Bradshaw, you know, I was growing up in the 70s. It would be, man, I remember that big, great catch by Lynn Swan to help win a Super Bowl. And it's like, if you look at his stats, he was like 10 for 16 or something. Like, they barely threw the ball. Like, if you threw
100 yards. Bob Greasy just had a birthday, like, I think last week or so. And in, like, those Super Bowls, I think it was one of the Super Bowls, the stat was astounding. I think he threw the ball 6 times.
It's possible, because I remember the game when they were undefeated. They were 14-0. Yeah. That was the legendary season. And they beat the Redskins. I believe the final was like 14-7. And I'm pretty sure, because they had Larry Zonka, they had Mercury Morris. It's crazy how, like, going to a lot of sports and name the players. Like, I could tell you the players that were starting in Super Bowl 8, you know what I mean? Because, right, I was 8 years old, Super Bowl 59, right, and 59 years old. So it's like, I remember, you know, I don't remember the Jets winning because it was like, I was like 4.
Right.
But, you know, I remember shortly thereafter always watching the Super Bowls. And I remember going to, I actually went to the Dolphin Giant game the year they were undefeated. It was at Yankee Stadium when the Giants played there. But yeah, it was like 14-7. I remember Gary Yeprimian was the kicker for the Dolphins, right, and there was a bad snap and he tried to throw it and it went backwards. And I think that's the only way the Redskins actually scored that,
scored, yeah,
if I remember correctly. But, you know, back in those days, it was run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. You only passed it if you had to. And that was, yeah, even with good teams. Like the Cowboys used to, Roger Staubach and stuff. And I remember them playing the Steelers and it was like 35-31. But again, it was the same thing, that everybody relied on the running game.
Yeah.
And nowadays it's like, it's you look now, shit, you want to talk about looking at the 1940s, forget it. It's like crazy. but even from like the 1970s to what football is today.
Yeah, I mean I guess it's fair to say that the start of the change really was in the 80s with Marino and Elway emerging, but the 90s really set the pace. You had Montana, you had Elway, you had Marino, and then the 90s all of a sudden the quarterbacks start evolving into Favre and Young, and then there's no looking back in the 2000s, and it just, you start seeing those running backs drop off. It's just mind-boggling growing up with Peyton and, Franco Harris and OJ and all those guys, and then seeing how, once you got to Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, and then it starts dwindling, and it's like, it's crazy how that game changed like that.
Yeah, so, yep, fumble return. That's how they scored the Redskins. It was 14-7, and it was a 49-yard fumble return, which was from the kick when they were down 14-0. Bob Greasy threw 11 passes in the entire game for 88 yards. Zonka had 15 carries for 112. Kick had 12 carries for 38. And Mercury Morris had 10 carries. So that was 48 offensive plays. And the Redskins ran a lot more. 36 running plays and 28 passes. They ran 64 plays.
Wow.
So you look now, if you only ran 60 plays, man, what's wrong with your offense? Like with Mahomes. Like they didn't even have the ball in the first half. Like basically all they did, but Philly's a running team. So they roll out and Hurts runs. He hands it, and he hands it off.
I think we looked at they had the same amount of plays in the first half, each offense did, but the comparison in yards was
on the time of possession too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Chiefs had a total of like 23 yards, if that, compared to, the time and the yardage for the Eagles. And it's just, it's just crazy how that, and I was waiting for that second, that second half, you're like, and just watching the Chiefs in the past couple Super, that second half is when they adjust, kick in, and, but the one thing is that Fangio, he went against them already in a Super Bowl. So you should have, they have lesser players on the Chiefs this year to what they had when they faced them last time. And a defensive coordinator who already has seen the schemes and knows the Chiefs pretty much inside out at this point. So it made a lot of sense. And that is 20 minutes of football time.
I think they just played a terrible game. I don't know what it was. But it was 68 plays for the Eagles and 43 for the Chiefs, which is crazy because in the last quarter, the Chiefs ran a lot of plays.
Yeah.
To still be 25 behind,
Yeah.
They ran the ball 45 times, the Eagles.
Jeez. And yet,
they set the tone, Hurts had 11 for 72, and Barkley didn't do anything. He had one 10-yard run. That was the longest run that he had. So,
and he had three receptions, at least as a receiver, which was more than he was getting all year. So, just goes to show you never know.
No, I'll tell you, Barkley has had a good amount of catches in his. Yeah, he had six catches for 40.
Okay, yeah.
No, he's always been – that's the one thing about him. He's a guy who can be in for all four downs because, he is a good receiver. Not like Derrick Henry comes in, he's going to run the shit out of the ball.
Right.
But he's – they got a third down back to catch the passes. But Barkley had 57 yards. And, if you look at the numbers, Mahomes didn't play that bad, the two picks, but But hey, yeah. 21 out of 32 for 257. But it's like, well, you know, one was a 50-yarder and meaningless time. Right. You know, take that away and take out, you know, after the second touchdown. So, you know.
And the huge, and he had that huge fumble. He had that huge fumble when he was sacked, too, which
he had the huge fumble. He had the bad interception that got returned for the touchdown. And who was it? It was Brady earlier in the game. He goes, bottom line is, whoever turns the ball over, it's going to be almost impossible to win. You cannot play the game and have more turnovers than your opponent and still win the game. You know, and that's what happened to the Lions when they lost to the Commanders. And, you know, that's what happened when, you know, the Patriots lost to the Eagles. Nick Foles, Nick Foles played the game of his life.
Yeah.
And they put up a shit ton of points, or how Atlanta dominated the game and they fucked it up when they were up 28-3. There's no way you should lose that game. Yeah. You should be eating that clock up.
And I think it was also Brady who said, you know, if Mahomes would have just had the ball inflated about two more pounds, they would have been fine.
Yeah, it might have been, but it's kind of hard. He couldn't even throw the ball. He kept getting hit before he had a shot.
Right.
You know. You know, I don't blame Mahomes, but I can blame Mahomes. You know, you know, he played a miserable game. That was one of the worst games I've seen him play. They were, man, it's like that's the same team that kept putting up points against the Buffalo Bills. Like the Bills, you know, and again, we can go back and forth on that. But, man, I can't believe the Bills wouldn't have played a better game.
Yeah, I know. It's it's, but that's. Like they say, any given week, any given Sunday. Speaking of this,
Vince McMahon shaved his mustache. Holy Christ.
I know, right? And if you saw the picture of Shane McMahon, you'd think that it was Vince's dad because Shane was there.
I only saw a side picture. He looked kind of heavy. I don't know if he can, you know, go call the Rumble match next time they have one and try to get himself over.
Yeah, it was crazy. And Tony Khan was all over the place. And Undertaker
was
there.
That was really nice of Tony to make sure he got top line seats for Vince and Shane, you know.
Well, you know, it when you have your buddies there, you know, that's the you got to get them the good. The funniest thing is Vince was like, you know, close to the sidelines and Shane was in like the euchre seats. Which I thought was hysterical.
But they were sitting together.
The picture I saw was Shane was back and Vince was in the front. So, but again, you know how people like to post stuff to make it look.
Well, you know, he also had to rebook the show. You know, Vince, he likes to get involved during, you know, once the show's written, you know, in most cases, that's the show. You know, when I write the show, that's usually the show. But Vince, he likes to tweak it, you know, in the third quarter. You know, he had to change up the finish and, you know, everything got crazy. It was like, oh, I guess we got to pass the torch to the Eagles. I thought they were going to do it last year after they won the first one to the 49ers. Then I thought it was going to be this year when Buffalo was going to beat them.
I guess now you have to kind of go, well, since Vince doesn't have association with them, really, it comes down to they needed the Eagles to win to sell those Eagles title belts because they've sold all those Kansas City ones. Here's Vince, you know, close to the field, no mustache. And there's Shane looking
like
he's
there. Look, there's the field.
He looks like a gym coach who's disappointed that you didn't put your effort in. And then good old Taker looking very New Orleans-esque.
I'm telling you, he's really stepped out of the Undertaker character. I've been looking like on the Facebook feed. I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not a person who like listens to a lot of other podcasts. There's just almost there's a shit going on. But man, when I catch the Taker one and I catch Bischoff and stuff, man, there's some great shit in there. I got to tell you, it's like, wow. They're only playing little clips, even some of the Rogan stuff or whatever. It's like I see the popularity, but there's so many of the wrestling stuff from the people from the from back in the day telling some great stories. You know, it's funny because, you know, when I was talking to Rey Mysterio the other day, you know, we were talking about the Nitro Grill. And, you know, I remember being there, you know, the day that everything imploded and Eddie and the crew walked out. Yep. Like, I left before that happened. But Sal E can tell you, because he was there when Raven was going off on Bischoff, you know, you would have thought they were arguing because they were right by the soda fountain thing. So it's like, I think Raven was pissed off because Bischoff reached over to grab the Sprite or something. But they were right in that little cubicle where the servers usually go to refill people's drinks. And they were going off on stuff. But I do remember earlier in the night, because everybody used to go to the Betty Boop Bar in the MGM. Right. And I was going to go over to talk to Mike Tenay, but he was like in deep conference with Rey Mysterio at one of the tables at the bar. And I was like, yeah, I'll come back later or whatever. And then they were gone. But it was like, man, those were definitely some interesting times back in the day. It'd been nice to have some of that documentary footage, because I remember talking to Raven because my mom knew it was like on a flight or something and knew a friend of his or something. And that's how I started talking with him. Like, she met him on the plane and somehow I talked to, because I, you know, I was doing the wrestling stuff, you know.
Right.
So I guess that got brought up and whatever it was. And I remember talking to Raven, and then like 2 hours later, he was going off on Bischoff. So it's like, you know, there's great stories there. You know, Sally will tell you, you know, Kurt Hennig, he said, was like the best tipper in the world. He loved Kurt Hennig.
Yeah. And, you know, just saw something recently, a story, you know, kind of documenting how Wade Boggs and Kurt Hennig ended up.
Yeah. I saw that.
It was, you know, again, it's just one of those things, man, when thinking about it, that time frame and all these guys who now can't tell these stories, right? Because they've been gone for, you know.
You know, imagine if Wade Boggs was part of the West Texas Rednecks, you know what I'm saying?
Well, okay, you just said West Texas Rednecks. Super Bowl halftime show, rap is crap, or did you, you know, enjoy it?
You know, it's funny because most of my life I was a DJ, you know, so I played all varieties of music. I was up to date on everything. And now, as I've drifted away in the last 10 years, like, hey, Eminem, 50 Cent, whatever. Yeah, fantastic. You know, nobody to me beats the Prince thing. But, you know, Marquez made a post. He kind of said he wasn't more about how he sounded or anything like that. It was more of how he felt the entertainment value was, because there's been a big disconnect there. And my response was, I didn't think it was bad, horrible. I didn't think it was great. I just thought it didn't do anything for me. Like, sure. I know who Kendrick Lamar is? Absolutely. I remember playing some of his songs. I don't recall hearing any of them. And, you know, for the people that know him, like him, love him, whatever it is. I knew about the Drake feud. But I didn't pay that much attention to it. You know, it seemed to be a big deal, and they seemed to love it. My thing is, the Super Bowl halftime show should be for the masses, not like, hey, we're going to put on Tim McGraw. So if you only like country, you know, I would think that about anything. So when they had Rihanna, well, Rihanna is one of the biggest pop stars in the world. Everybody knows who Rihanna is. I thought she lip-synced through the whole thing, and I thought it was terrible. So not because it didn't sound great, but it did, because it was taped, you know. Sure. And then it was like, when The Weeknd did it, you know, I thought it was weird. I didn't dig it. And I'm very familiar with The Weeknd. The songs he sang, I know some great shit. But it was just a weird Super Bowl thing that I didn't dig that much. Now, Kendrick Lamar's was, he might be singing about something, but I don't know what that is. So I can't say, right, hey, that was great. Hey, that was bad. All I look at it was, yeah, I didn't really know the songs. You know, I didn't really know the message. And there's people saying, this is the one that is really the most of, this is the worst I've ever seen, and this is the best I've ever seen. Usually there was a lot more in the middle. This one, it was just polar opposites on, you know, what people thought of the performance. I think it's hard when there's a lot of people who are watching or listening who don't know the product. So you don't know the product, you know. I was telling the wife in the car today. I'm like, they were like, well, yeah, so what about the people who only like rock or country? Well, you know, I heard two Shaboozy songs that I think are really cool, but he can't do a 25-minute show at the Super Bowl. If he did, I'd be like, ah, what the fuck is this? You know, yeah, that one song, but at least you know the song, you know? Right. Like, to me, it's always nostalgia that's going to sell. I think the masses are generally going to go with, because again, he didn't have just Eminem. You had Eminem, you had Dr. Dre, you had, you know, you had 50 Cent, whatever it is, you had Mary J. Blige, you know, people want to see a lot of people, you know. I don't know who Beyonce had, but again, Beyonce is one of the biggest pop stars in the world. So, you know, but I think if Beyonce went out there and just sang her country stuff, there would be a lot of upset people. You know what I mean?
Right. Sure.
It's like, hey, it's 15 minutes. If you don't like it, turn it off. Who gives a fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think one of the guys that I know, Gary Kroger, who was on Saturday Night Live back in the 80s.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah. Wasn't he married to like Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
No, they weren't married. Brad Hall is still married to her.
Okay, I know it was one of the, but that was the same time frame. Yeah.
Right, and all three of them went to Northwestern together, and they got hired at the same time. And Gary made a great point. Gary was maybe like 8-10 years old when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan. And it was also the anniversary of the Sullivan performance in 64. So it just happened that kind of hit him. It's like what he saw in the Beatles on that show that really gravitated him and drew him in. Could wait to talk about it with his friends the next day is what he saw in his, you know, 20-year-old son who was watching this and knew every word and was just enamored with the performance, loved the performance. And he realized that it's like, this is what this should be about. And that is reaching that audience who is excited to then talk about it and make it excited and push it out there. And said, you know, it's like my parents watching me watch the Beatles. It's not their thing, but they could appreciate the fact that their kid was enjoying it and related to it. Now, I know if we said this about Joey, you'd probably be like, ah, fuck him. But, you know.
Right. But the thing is, as a DJ, I have a similar taste. So when he's growing up and he likes Linkin Park, so did I, because I was playing it all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of different in certain veins.
Sure.
The way you look at things. But as I said, the older you get, it's me. I'm the biggest sports fan, but I love baseball more than anything. But I could name you the starting lineup for a lot of teams in 1979 right now. And I couldn't name you 10 players on most teams right now. And I still love baseball. Because there's so much other things going on, you don't keep up. Like, I don't keep up with hockey. I see it because it's on the TV, who won, who lost, whatever. Same thing with baseball. It's every day. You try to keep up, and it's like, oh, 3-time All-Star. And I'm like, holy shit, really? I've never heard of this guy. Like, it's even hard for me to believe that I don't know who certain people are. Yeah. Like, I'm a big Met fan. I'm a big Yankee fan. But there's still guys on the Mets and Yankees to this day that I don't know. That never was the case, you know, from when I was 5 years old. You know, I know who the players were.
Right. And also let's face it too, the you know, back in our day, the guys, even guys, you know, who maybe played shortstop would play shortstop for about 7 years on a team, right? You know, you didn't have the constant 3-and-out or 1-year contracts.
Well, I was back in the day where free agency was just starting. So a guy was kind of held hostage to have to play for that team. But I remember 1975 was like Andy Messersmith. He was with like the Dodgers, and somehow he did the free agent stuff. And I think he went to the Yankees because everybody always go to the Yankees because they would pay more. But it's like the same thing, like in basketball, like who are these people? So unless I know who all the superstars are,
right?
But that's about it. The only sport right now I can tell you every starting quarterback or every starting running back is football. Like, right. I know everything still, but everything else has dropped off. So it's like, man, you know a lot about football. It's like, yeah, because now I know far less
about
basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer don't count. You know what I mean?
Soccer.
So
why would you even bring up soccer? Oh,
you know, it's the same thing in music. You know, when I never going to go to Sirius, I ain't paying for that shit. I like Stern, but I wasn't going to pay for that. And then you got the free trial, and then you tried, and it was like, oh, shit, I got this station that I can hear all my hair metal bands. Oh, this is awesome. Right. Oh, wait, they got all the 80s new wave, Depeche Mode, Duran Duran, all that stuff. Oh, okay. I ended up keeping it. And then it was like I drifted out from that little time period to now Octane's my favorite channel, and Octane has all the new metal stuff and the Volbeats and the, you know, but what's crazy is that all these bands that I thought dropped off that I've seen in the last year now, the Godsmacks, the Smack, this, the Shine Down, there's Papa Roach. Like these guys are killing it again. Like they were like Linkin Park. And it was like, these were the bands in 2005, 2007. So what's that? Almost 20 years ago. And it's like 20 years later, these bands are back and they're still killing it. And it's like, now I got the mixture of that alternative with the newer version with the older stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. In fact, Disturbed's coming around soon on the 25th anniversary. They're playing the full album. I know Godsmack, I think, is...
Yeah, they're another one. They put out another good album, Disturbed, recently.
Yeah.
You know, and I almost went. I think they were playing at Planet Hollywood a year and a half ago or something like that. I almost went. But yeah, it was like, it's crazy how a lot of those bands that were like the most popular bands, and even Limp Bizkit comes out and does a tour. Creed, you know, has put out shit, and Creed's like been sold out. They made more money on this tour and sold more tickets on this tour than they did when they were the biggest band. When they were fighting with Limp Bizkit at the show for Howard Stern was doing back in New York 25 years ago when they fought over who was going to headline.
Yeah. And in fact, just yesterday at Target, in their T-shirt section, they're now selling a Creed shirt. So
there you go.
It's
and it's crazy because it's, you know, Scott Stapp, the singer, he put out a new album right while they were going on tour.
Yep.
And the one song is one of the best tunes I've ever heard from those guys. It's one of the best songs I heard this year. And it's just like, you know, that's kind of my genre, that little bit of heavy, you know, alternative stuff. So it's like, but I also, hey, I can dig Jelly Roll and I can dig Shaboozy and I dig Justin Bieber stuff when he was coming out with shit, you know. Yeah. You know, I used to say, I went to a Metallica concert and I went to a Rick Springfield concert, and I enjoyed them both immensely.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the big thing. And speaking of variety and stuff, look at this. Future Shock just happened. And speaking of variety, you have Johnny Royal in his first match teaming with a guy who I believe did start 25 years ago in Randy Marcel.
Yeah, he was at our very first show.
You know, taking on Greatness and Tenacious. And I saw something Ricky posted, I think it was yesterday, about, you know, recently having a couple people come up to him and just express the fact that they appreciated what he does, you know, as an entertainer and as a wrestler. And you could tell he was really very moved by that idea that, you know, people are at least giving him that recognition. And I think both him and Brandon, you know, just kind of, we always kind of joke about it and overlook the fact that, you know, those are the perfect guys for guys like Johnny to get in the ring and work, you know, for a first match. And, you know, I mean, look at the crowd. I mean, I just, how cool is this Future Shock for, you know, everything about we're about to talk about coming up. I mean, damn, for a Future Shock, this was great to see the enthusiasm behind what these guys are doing.
You know, it's kind of harping on what I was talking about last week about, you know, at the end of the day, when you reach, you know, the final curtain, it's like, you know, what do you remember for? And for some people, it's like, hey, man, I made a lot of fucking money. And as I said, in the wrestling business, there's very few people who are making a lot of money. And there's very few people who even have really a legacy to stand on. And regardless of my haters or the people who love me, you think I'm great, whatever it is, I brought wrestling to Vegas back again.
Right.
Just because I liked wrestling and wanted to do it. But what the people or a lot of people aren't going to understand or realize or even know, as I said, the legacy is the kids class kids being friends who didn't have any friends, people who met significant others. There's Brandy's getting married to a guy she met at the fucking show. And seeing Johnny Royal, I will remember that day forever, but Johnny Royal will be telling his fucking grandkids about that day.
Yeah.
February 8th, 2025, this motherfucker had people fly from Tennessee to come see him wrestle. Like, I jokingly said it, but I'm pretty sure it's true because this guy's never had a match before. So how does he have a catchphrase? And if he does have a catchphrase, how does anybody know it? I said he must have included it in the group chat to the 63 people that he sold the ticket to. Because he went, he did his thing, and everybody cheered it with him. And it's like, if you don't think that's going to be, you know, and again, I hope it isn't, but this could be the greatest moment he ever has in his life. Yeah. Because this is what he wanted to reach for. And he was always a hard worker. He couldn't afford dues. Hey, Joe, what if I help clean the gym? And I'm like, yeah, I've heard this one before. But John isn't a 19-year-old kid. He's right. In his 30s who wanted to pursue this. He's a man, understands responsibilities, and nobody works harder than this motherfucker. And that's why I try to harp on the students. Like, hey, not only did Jonathan sell you 63 fucking tickets to the show, he's cleaning the fucking gym. How about making sure you make the fucking effort to help? Like, this guy left for a while, wasn't sure because, you know, he thought he was going to be stuck in the referee mode. Even though he wanted to be the referee because he wanted to be on a show, he wanted to be part of what we were doing. And that was the path to get there. And then he started putting in the work, you know. Thank goodness he's growing the beard back. I told him that was very important. But, you know, when he went out there and I surrounded him, because that's my job. My job is, what can I do to make this person succeed? Well, I'm going to make Remy Marcel his partner, who is not only a teacher, he's also the wrestler who's been doing it for a very long time. And then you got Ricky and you got Brandon G. Brandon G, you can call him an unsung hero. You know, he's a guy who ain't winning very many matches. You know, he's that guy on a show that you may not notice, not over flamboyant, but he's sure going to make his opponent look good.
Yep.
He understands what's needed of him, and it's very easy for people, and I've seen it a million times, because they're not winning, because they don't feel they're getting their push, that they just fucking mail it in and don't give a fuck. Like, they just want to make sure they get their cool spots in, and that's all they give a shit about.
Yep.
And, you know, Brandon, isn't praised enough for what he does. You know, he's the guy, gets to be on shows, okay, not on all the shows, but he got himself in better shape. You know, he's made himself an integral cog on the shows. You know, yep. People know his phrases. People know, you know, that's kind of hard for somebody whose win-loss record is, you know, probably 4-106. You yep. know what I mean? Yep. And it's like, and then you got Ricky, who can wrestle, but he chooses to be the blunt of the joke. He chooses to be the guy that Lee Moriarty paid money to come see because he enjoyed him so much.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And with Ricky, it's like, hey, bro, got this idea. You know, Jonathan's going to have a match. You know, Remy was talking about a tag. Think you guys should be the guys. Just like Colin Muldoon bounced back. Why? Because he wrestled Gregory Sharp.
Yeah.
You know, Greg is a true leader. He yeah. is a guy who's going to work with somebody. And he smacked around that punk kid. I'll tell you what, that kid, I ain't lying when I say he's one of the cockiest motherfuckers I know. He really reminds me a lot of Bret the Threat.
Yeah.
You know, they come from, Bret was more MMA, but, you know, Colin's that amateur wrestling background. And, you know, he gets cheered because he has his fans, his family there. Sharp's a heel. But, man, Colin is a born heel. You know, that there's no doubt that that is going to be, you know, what he becomes later on down the line. You know, yeah. clean cut 18-year-old kid but he legit pretty much thinks he's better than everybody. Like, I ain't lying. Like, I was telling the story to somebody. He was like, when I was yapping at him about his match on New Year's, I was like, yeah, you know, match wasn't very good. And his response is, well, you need to look at it again. Like, do your fucking mind look at it again? Like, luckily, I'm a nice person. You know, I'm just like, shut the fuck up. You know, and it's like, I ain't telling you because I want to make you feel bad. Just like when you had your first good match with Watson, I told you it was good. And the match with Sharp was good, but Sharp carried the match.
Sure.
You know, then we had another debut, you know, guy who's pushing me. I have to go on Facebook. It's like, bro, Remy already told me. I don't need to have another Facebook message that Remy said you were ready. We've already had the discussion. I don't need to hear it 10 fucking times, okay? I said, I'm figuring out the card. I will let you know. And you will be the first one to know. Just because you're ready today doesn't mean you're getting the match next week. It could be for the next show. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time.
Right.
So things fell into place. I ended up getting somebody, the Jacob East guy came in. From Arizona, and he worked RJ Wild, and Jacob's got his girl who worked the one match with us, Taylor York, came out with him. They had a solid little opening match, but yeah. Initially we were going to do Oasis for the ID, but he was in Florida for a taping for something that you might see on TV later, but with Oasis gone, Sanders was going to be the guy to wrestle Oasis. So then it was like, okay, Thad Maximus, kind of a tweener guy. He's had some experience, only wrestled for us once, but he came over from Santino's where he trained for a while. So I was right. like, okay, this is the perfect spot for C4, the Air Force guy, Nathan. And, you know, when he was in the Battle Royal at the Halloween show, he was able to sell probably 10, 12 tickets. He's like, oh, I'll sell tickets, blah, 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 blah. All right, here's your opportunity. Well, he sold 18 tickets, and that was, you know, on 5 days' notice, and he handled himself very well. But again, there was a lot of rookie mistakes that were in that match that, you know, didn't come across the way we would have wanted. But, you know, it was a relatively strong debut. And again, when you have that crowd behind you, man, it's so much easier. You know, there's times you see guys come out and it's just like, hey, everybody, this guy's really good, you know, but, you know, Like, yeah. Did the survey, like, I'm like, you know, I had to be the ring announcer. So I try to keep things as light as possible. I'll joke around, make fun of some people, you know, hurt people's feelings, you know, the kind of guy that I am, you know. So I was like, hey, you know, how many of you have never been to a wrestling show before? And the number was far less than I would have thought. You know what I mean? I would have thought there would have been way more people who hadn't seen a show. But then it was like, well, yeah, they've seen a show, but it was the few people that are there for Colin saw a Colin show. And the few people saw somebody else's show. So it was like, then it was like, how many people have seen a show other than an FSW show? Then the number was a little bit less, but it was still pretty decent enough. Crowd was great. Another one who made our debut was Daniel Ismael, who for a first-time promo, he's another guy who I talked about him. He came from Texas and didn't tell me he had training, and he paid the full rate. I'll never discount a guy who wants to pay the full rate, because you get a lot of people, oh, yeah, well, I got some training, and I got this, because they're trying to lower their dues, and they can't fucking do anything. So Remy's like, hey, that Daniel kid, and I'm like, huh? It's like, he just started. Oh, no, he works in Texas, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I think he's ready. I'm like, okay, I need a guy for Rory. All of a sudden on Friday, he's like, hey, I got this promo I cut. I want you to, you know, check it out, and what do you think? And I was blown away. I'm like, this fucking promo was fucking awesome. It was like, this is this lovable loser, okay? And he's cutting this promo, looking at the walls, the rafters, and this is where I want to be, future stars of wrestling. But then in the next breath, he's putting over Raw Reese's talents and what it means to him. And it was like anything you could pinpoint. I didn't care for the, hey, they can call me daddy, and he was trying to do the thing with Reese. Hey, you know, that may not have missed, that may not have hit, but the majority of the promo was better than literally 90% of the guys on my roster. That's how good that promo was to me, which now makes me want to utilize him in different situations, because he reminds me of an early Cutthroat Cody, where Cody wasn't the best wrestler, wasn't in great shape, but man, he could talk.
Yeah.
Like when I talked about when we did the Rookie of the Year angle, and he was in tears dedicating it to his grandpa who had passed away, and he's doing it for him and doing all this stuff. And it's like, man, this is really engaging. But when you're presented as a loser, you're the lovable loser. It's hard to give the jobber guy, as they're called, the one who's putting over the enhancement talent, usually doesn't get the microphone to talk.
Right.
But in those cases, you had to give them that opportunity, because, man, the crowd wanted to rally behind Cody. And I think this Daniel kid is that kid that people are going to want to, you know, get behind.
Yeah.
And so you got that match. You got Collins match. You got the C4 match. You got Johnny's match. That's 8 matches, and 4 of them are pretty much people who haven't had more than like 1 or 2 matches.
Yeah.
You know, holding the show, and the openers, the RJ Wild and Jacob Beast from Arizona, who RJ Wild, very talented young kid, but he's barely got any time in the business. Yeah. And I didn't see a lot of the scramble, but man, that finish from JKM was fucking awesome. You know, he's on the second rope, did the thing, boom, into a 450. Come on. How do you not say, man, that was sweet.
The guy can do some cool shit.
Yeah. But as I told him, I'm like, when a match is scheduled to go 8 and you're in a fatal 4-way and you go 5, that's a problem. You know, that's a match that by accident you should go over by 2 minutes.
Right.
Not under by 3. Like, this is the match where that's why I like scrambles, 4-way, 5-way, whatever it is, because I can hit a big move and the match ain't over because somebody else broke up the count. So you get to see a lot of cool shit. It's like hey, guys, you're the cool match. You're the guys who can go out there and do all the cool stuff and don't have to be like, oh, I can't believe he kicked out at two on that. Oh, I can't believe that wasn't the finish because somebody's breaking it up. And then you go 3 minutes short. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Freddy Cordova and Enrique Calderon, who drove 6 hours from Arizona to go fucking 5 minutes when I'm giving you eight. I should be yelling at you for going 12. So, you know, and what I saw that, yeah, fantastic. So, you know, and then we had a, you know, trademark in excellence in the Killer D's. That was solid, you know.
Yeah.
Four guys who know each other very well, so they're very comfortable in the ring. And then we have a new tag team and a new group that I have now confirmed that they will be going forward as the Asylum, which is King Marcus Anderson, who believes he's a warrior from the show Vikings, and he was born in 1545. So the Asylum has been born. Look for new members coming soon. And then, of course, as I've told it many times, Phil Godfrey is my Norman the Lunatic.
Right.
So so it's definitely interesting stuff. I don't know. Did I miss a match?
I don't think so. I think that was it. I think that was the full card, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I guess I might have missed one. Let me check the papers here. Future Shot. Yeah. That tag, already. Yeah, we got them all.
Yeah.
You know, that one was a little sloppy. I would have liked to have seen a little smoother in that tag with Warren and Oliver teaming up again. Younger guys. All four of them not really having tag team partners, not really ever working together. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, a little bumpy. But you still would have hoped that, you know, it would have come across a little stronger. You know, Warren did wrestle Phil at the show before. So you're hoping it's some chemistry. But, you know, again, that's part of Future Shock where you're maybe not trying to put four relatively inexperienced guys in there together.
Right.
You know, to do things. So, but overall, you know, like I said, packed house, putting the last two guys who sold, you know, 80% of the tickets on as the semi-main and main was smart from me. It was good to see, though, that the majority of fans from whatever a lot of the other guys sold stuck around till the end. Like it was full. In there, you know, we probably had room for another 20-30 people, you know, because the bleachers were all full, which was funny because it was general admission seating. You could seat anywhere you want.
Right.
But I think people are so used to having to go in the bleachers.
Right.
That they just went in there. Cause like I figured I was gonna have to tell people, hey, bleachers are open. And then I looked and it's like, well, there's like 20 seats on the front row, and the bleachers are pretty much full, and people are trying to squeeze in there. So
well, you know, from that very successful night, and I mean, again, the promise of what is coming down the pipeline to what we've got coming up here on the 15th, 7 p.m. It is Valentine's Day Massacre, man. Already announced right here. I mean, Vandegrift and Delgado, you know, Delgado is starting to, you know, prove himself, getting back from that injury. You know, good matchup there. Look at this one here. Man, I've been Culture Inc. I go back to about 2019, 2020 when they got on my radar. And Malik is such a solid worker. And to see him and Jay, kudos. Good book.
And that's what it's all about, trying to get fresh matchups that are good and trying to school the FSW fans who don't know who certain people are. And it's like, here, we're going to give them to you. And again, now this will be the second or third time that he's been in an FSW ring. You know, people want to see fresh blood, but they also want to see somebody there, not just the one time.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we're trying to make that name proud, Future Stars of Wrestling. So when we go out there, we're looking for, you know, who we can bring in. Like I said, so many people reach out, and yep, that becomes the hardest thing. You know, hey, and it's like, yeah, I got you, you know. But nothing beats another member of the roster's recommendation. That right, puts you at the top of the list. You right, want to get booked at FSW, A, you better be good, because a Danny Limelight has to tell me, hey, this guy's good. A Hammerstone, a Class, you know, these out-of-state guys, the Tito's say, hey, I have a guy.
Yep.
If they say I have a guy who's hit me up, well, I'm going to pay attention, and if there's a spot, we're going to try to give it to him. Right. You know, Tito yeah, was, I think, the guy who talked to me about the Leo Canedo, who I like a lot, just haven't been able to really find something for the guy. Right. But he came in, he did a Future Shock, and he did really well. RJ yeah, Wild, you know, JKM, you know, it's a Dante guy. And it's like, yeah, it's you know, Jaden Monroe, that's a Class in Reno. Devin yeah, Reno, he's a Hammerstone and Class guy. Class, yeah, he's a Hammerstone, Graves and Dom guy. You yeah, know, and it's the same thing, you know, just like we say with the Santino crew.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that they've grandfather clause their you know, their trainees into the mix. And then there's the ones, you know, which we got out of there that we like, that, you know, they feel, hey, no big deal if I work at FSW or not, if they pay my rate. Well, okay, sorry. You know, this is what we're trying to do. If you want to be a part of it, fantastic. If you don't, there's many more that I can get, like a Malik. And, you know, NJ obviously brokers that. And, yep, you know, Kia Dream wanted to come back. She's going to be in the Future Legend Women's Tournament. Yes. Just didn't have a spot for her on the Valentine's show because we're trying to set up for No Escape March 2nd at the Silverton Casino, where we yes, just announced that Alice Blair and Gypsy Mac, as well as Makeshift Chemistry and Sky High, you know, these two matches have to be in a cage. After yeah, everything that's gone down, you know, Gypsy Mac, she's been outnumbered. You know, Dante can't take out the whole snuff. And Sky High with the sneak attacks. It's like, all right, let the best team win. Let the best woman win. And we got the major announcement on the 15th regarding the final steel cage match that will involve the, you know, Danny Limelight and Notorious, as well as, you know, Ice in the Faction. So not only is the FSW Heavyweight Championship on the line, there is going to be another major stipulation, because we're going to make the announcement about that match at the show. And then part of the stipulation will be announced then also. Yeah. So then we got Duke Lawrence. He's going to be wrestling Oliver Kennedy. So Matt Vandegrift, you saw, he's going to wrestle Andrew Delgado. Fresco and Watson, they're going to be in action in a tag match earlier in the night. So, you know, Tito Escondido's back. So, yeah, so still working on, you know, who Tito wants to beat up.
And, yeah,
you know, the show, don't get there late. The show is going to open. Dante King is going to, you know, has some things that he needs to talk about.
Yeah. And I'm sure that the collector is going to be lurking somewhere around the area to hear what Mr. King has to say. So,
pretty sure. And that ain't Kenny to you, by the way.
But, you know, it's just remarkable, again, what's coming up, you know, with Valentine's Day Massacre on the 15th. And then, of course, again, No Escape, Apocalypse, coming up on March 2nd, 5 o'clock from Silverton. And speaking of Silverton, good time to talk about the Chris Bay tribute.
Yes. So, You know what? We decided to make things easier. You know, once again, want to thank the Hard Rock for everything they were trying to help do. But, it, you know, just logistics-wise, between having very little front rows to having to walk down an escalator to put the ring back or go up, well, go down a non-moving escalator to also having to go up an escalator and maneuver it around the second floor, it just became too difficult. You know, we're already at over 70 front rows, and there we were only going to be able to do 45 to 50, so we can't really shave off those 20 front rows. So we're all set with that. It's going to be at the Silverton Casino. They're giving us a better deal. You know, they're waiving that, you know, $5 surcharge per ticket. They're knocking down, you know, giving us a fair price. It's only a little bit more than the Hard Rock one is. But we can also fill the room. And, you know, as of right now, you know, we can announce who's going to be here for sure. You know, Brian Cage and Shane Strickland from AEW, Trey Miguel and Ace Austin. Rich Swann has reached out. Ricochet has reached out. So we're going to see what is possible. Rey Mysterio, who, you know, when I was talking about, unfortunately, he's going to be part of the European tour, as is Dominic, who we were hoping to get on the show. Because right. they had inquired. Actually, Ray's supposed to come by the school. He wants to film some stuff for the event and also present me with some stuff to auction off, autograph Rey Mysterio mask, maybe a figure, shirt, whatever it is. So, you know, we're hoping for that from Ray. As we said, Rhino is going to be there. Announcing is going to be Sean T, who works for Sami Callihan a lot. And Melissa Santos. Referees are referees Cody and Amber, but also Rick Knox from AEW and Justin Borden, who works the New Japan shows, who's worked for us. Both of them have worked, you know, many times.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just trying to finalize a few more names. Alex Zane, who's made a name for himself in New Japan. Yeah. And, you know, the big name making his return to FSW. We're still waiting on making the announcement, you know, figure it out for yourself. WWE superstar current, they are behind this 1,000% and allowing him to work. So, you know, our fans are going to be very excited, you know, still figuring out an opponent for him. I reached out and messaged Rhino. He kind of liked the idea. So, you know, hopefully by next week, we're going to be able to announce the homecoming that many people have been wanting and wishing for. So, yeah, and there's going to be more names. You know, Ice Williams is going to be there. Danny Limelight's going to be there. Our whole crew is going to be there, you know. And, you know, who else is going to reach out? The show's 6 weeks away. You know, you never know, you know, who's going to want to show up, find out about it, whatever, make their way out. So, we hope to have more names, but again, as we said, Mecca 10, the benefit for Bay, you know, so a lot going on.
Yeah.
In the next 6 weeks.
Right. And then you can take a nap and go straight.
And then it's Mania week. And then you take another nap and it's the anniversary show.
Right. It's like, man, the first 6 months of this year is just insane. Which
no
is,
doubt.
It's great to see. And there's so much going on that, you know, it's just a great time again for, you know, for being a wrestling fan. It's probably the best time since, you know, the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, where you have just so much talent, that it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I can honestly say I believe the talent level in 2025, and you can't say that about a lot of other sports and a lot of other things, but
right.
you can swat away 100 wrestlers, and I could still find 40, and you'd be like, oh, what a great show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's... I mean, it is. It's an embarrassment of riches. And it just, again, it just goes to show that when the I think the key is that the internet, we're now at that point where that early internet influenced certain people, and then it influenced that next crop. Now we're at the point where you have so much that's available, where these people who are between the ages of 18 and 30 have literally been able to be influenced by every realm of this planet, where it's not just, I want to be a WWE guy. I'm a big fan of TNA. I like New Japan, but it's like, I can see a guy who wrestles in Idaho and be like, holy crap, I can do this. Look at this guy, you know? It's crazy that, we're now at that point where it's just that metamorphosis of, how people picked up on things, and now where people are turning that into a talent that is, just head and shoulders above where it used to be. How do I get into wrestling? And that used to be the big secret, and now it's here. It's like right in your face. And we're seeing the benefits of it as fans. So final words, Joe.
Hey, if you support FSW, there's so much out there. If you like wrestling, hope to see, everybody there. I know everybody's looking forward to the Chris Bay benefit show, but man, No Escape's a big one. We got 3 steel cage matches. We got Jay Vidal, we got Bateman, we got all these people that, the best of the best is going to be on hand. It's going to be a great show. Valentine's Day Massacre, we're doing the final setup for that. So if you follow FSW, and you're into the storylines of where things are going, this is definitely a can't miss show. So, coming off the biggest future shock probably we've ever done. And we're hoping, to roll that momentum down to, who knows, maybe Johnny Royal can win the Against All Odds Rumble and become the next champion. You want to watch that rise. You want to watch that meteoric rise.
Stranger things have happened in FSW history.
That's right. So, we're right back at it. We had a show, and No Rest for the Wicked. We'll be back again this week.
And I think you just found the name of another upcoming No Rest for the Wicked.
No Rest for the Wicked.
November 16th, 2025. That's where I'm seeing this.
Mark it down.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in again. And check it out on Troller TV if you're not in town, because it's going to be one hell of a show coming up here on Saturday, 7 p.m. start time.
7 p.m. And hopefully as we move toward the Chris show, maybe we can get some of the talent that's going to be on there, and maybe they'll come on the show, which I'm pretty sure, anytime you ask Ice Williams, he'll come on. So,
right. Do we have to clear it with the office though?
We might have to. I'll have to give Gabe a call.
That's a good question on these guys. Hopefully we'll get some guys on and, especially some local guys that we know. And, because everyone's excited about what's happening with the benefit show. All right, everybody. Until next time, keep tuning in. Happy wrestling, everybody. None will.